you so much for being here with us today and choosing us over all of the other, maybe more mundane activities in your life, other than, of course, gardening. Well, anyway, y'all, I want to thank you again for being here with us, and welcome to the kitchen table, our executive producer, Michelle Yark. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking, and you?
I'm doing pretty good. What was your week like?
Good.
That was good. And then across the glass wall over there, of course, our engineer keeping us alive and well, all balanced and music dynamic and all the things that he does for living here at Stirring It Up Studios, Dean Slama. How are you doing, Dean?
Hey, y'all.
Have you ever watched that show, Hoarders? Have you ever watched that show?
I think I see where this is going.
No. I'm talking about me, not you. You can tell from the studio when you arrived.
There were about 25 years worth of equipment. It was like a museum or a history lesson. It was,
and because I am a historian, even though this is electronic equipment and the fact that some of them still have cathode ray tubes in it. I mean,
real interesting stuff.
It shows the history of radio, doesn't it? Anyway, you doing well?
Oh, life is great. I can't complain.
Good. You know, we had our big bushry dinner.
Oh, I heard about that.
That went really well. Michelle, that was fantastic.
Was it good? Well, I had surgery. I couldn't go.
You had surgery. You couldn't go, but you look like you came out of it very well.
Yes, thank you.
Anyway, we're going to talk about the boot tree then. I want to talk about our new pig pen coming up and all that, because now we got to start the process over for next year. But the boucherie dinner was fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to thank all of our guests who came and were part of that. But anyway, Michelle, today is a special day. And Slama, you have to be tuned into this because, you know, every one of us have what we casually call life-changing experiences. And it just goes over your head like, oh, okay, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah.
To visit certain places in the world and touch these, or be touched, I should say, by the happenings in those places can, in fact, be life-changing. And I have to say that the trip that we just took to Israel with a group of 31 people from Baton Rouge, a visit to the Holy Land, was indeed life-changing for me, I'm going to say, certainly. And I'll explain that a little later. But I'm going to say that you cannot go there and not be affected in some way.
Absolutely, and you carry it with you. And there were 33 of us from Baton Rouge, all of us from the Cypress Springs Mercedarian Prayer Center. We joined a larger group.
So Sister Dulce Maria's beautiful
her ministry
place
center.
That's right.
We just had her on the radio show. We joined a larger group. There were 174 of us that did a pilgrimage through the Holy Land with Jeff Cavins. Incredible. And, you know, it was a life-changing experience. And, of course, there were some fun moments and some funny moments. And the adventure began almost immediately, if you'll remember, because when we arrived at Ben-Gurion International Airport there in Tel Aviv, there were four of us on this flight from Louisiana. And the four of us, that was you and me and Kim Johnson and Scott Dumite, when we went to the luggage carousel and we were there waiting and had our luggage never arrived.
I said, oh no, oh no. 3 days without luggage. Well, I knew we were in trouble when Michelle, realizing the luggage wasn't there, she put her arms out, she put her head kind of up in the air, and she was walking like a zombie saying, mascara, rollers, mascara, rollers.
Let me tell you.
I said, well, get her, catch her right away before she hits and trips over the belt. That's all right, everything went fine.
No, it had the potential of being an international crisis, I admit, but thankfully, my guardian angel seriously was with me because I put my makeup and my hot rollers in my carry-on.
Okay. Anyway, y'all, well, that was the first thing. Then we realized that it was raining.
And pouring.
Raining. And raining more than it had in 100 years.
And he's not just saying
that. I'm not kidding you. It was a 100-year record in the desert. We landed amid this pouring rain. Lake Kinneret, or the Sea of Galilee, as we call it, rose 9 inches in 1 day. And 9 inches more the following day.
Oh,
and 18 inches of water into the Sea of Galilee.
And then when we did get to the hotel, our guide was saying, you know, we know you're all tired. It's going to be a few hours before the rest of the group gets here.
Right.
But if you would like to, you know, stroll along the boardwalk, right there on the Mediterranean, feel free. Of course, there were gale force winds.
And in the weather.
Yeah, pouring rain the size of your fingers, right? And he said, y'all can stroll if you like, put a poncho
see
on.
See the scenery.
60 mile an hour wind.
It was treacherous. So we thought, well, no, we can't stroll along the boardwalk. We'll go to the market.
The Tel Aviv Carmel.
The Tel Aviv Carmel Market. It was an open-air market.
An open-air market, okay. I might mention, which we didn't know. Well, it was close to the hotel, and we tried it. So we put on our ponchos. We took off down the street. You, I, and Kim Johnson. Did you remember that picture of Marilyn Monroe standing over the wind duck with her dress over her head, the white dress over her head? Do you know what I'm talking about, that scene?
Yeah, classic.
Yeah, well, imagine that's our ponchos. People could take a look. We were soaked, y'all. We were absolutely drenched from head to toe as we looked at food vendors of every kind. We just had to do it.
We had to do it. And, you know, I kept seeing these flash bulbs, Slama, and I thought, who has got this huge camera that's making this big flash bulb? And, you know, I guess it's because I had the hat over my head. I realized it was lightning. It was vicious lightning. And I thought, oh, dear God, we're going to have a Saul moment right here.
Well, we did find refuge in a little restaurant.
Well, we did. We did. And it was called the Good Food Cafe.
That's how we knew to go in. Besides that Good Food Cafe, yeah. I said, Michelle, look, there's good food right there. We're in Israel, and I mean, who knows what we're going to have, but we know it's going to be good. Right?
Can't argue with the sign. No.
I mean, marketing. The guys were marketing.
It was our first little taste of local fare, and we had the chicken and beef meatballs. Remember that?
Oh, they were delicious.
And that pesto sauce. Was it pesto?
It was a chimichurri, but it was absolutely fabulous. One of the best. Of course, legitimate, authentic sauce in its own land is better than our facsimiles, right? So, yeah, chimichurri, beautiful.
And that other interesting dish, shakshuka?
Yeah, Slama, it was this egg that was poached inside of what we would call a Creole sauce, a beautiful, rich tomato sauce with garlic and onions and all these spices, and the eggs are poached in it. And, of course, eggs are protein, so a lot of people around the world will eat eggs in the place of meat, and it just made sense. This was their meatballs and spaghetti, and we washed it down with a bite of pastry and a strong cup of Arabic coffee, and then we were able to set out against the gale winds again to walk 7 blocks to our hotel, totally drenched, realizing we had no clothes, from socks to underwear to pants to, we had soaked. Nothing waiting for us other than these drenched clothes and shoes soaking wet as well. But it was a good moment.
The water was over our ankles when we walked back.
Oh, well, you know, y'all, that kind of got us there. But in all seriousness, this was a pilgrimage that was led by biblical scholar Jeff Cavins and his wife, Emily. And what was so wonderful about the trip is that Jeff gave us daily lectures at all of the Christian sites that really put the Bible in perspective for us. And, of course, being Catholic and not studying the Bible as youngsters, suddenly, you know, we started to see things come alive. We're standing on the mouth of the Beatitudes, the place where Jesus spoke his famous Sermon on the Mount. And all of a sudden I said, wow, this is a real place. It exists. I'm here.
That's right. We landed in Tel Aviv, as we said, but then we headed north to the Upper Galilee region, and we spent our first week there. We stopped at Caesarea Maritima.
Oh, that great seaport of Herod, where St. Paul was sent off to Rome to be beheaded right from that port. That was unbelievable.
We had lunch at a little roadside cafe, falafel and pita bread, which was delicious. They had Coke Zero. I could read. I found out I could read Arabic writing. I was so excited.
Yeah, Coke Zero in Arabic. And Michelle said, I could read Arabic. Well, then remember from there, we went to the Jezreel Valley. And Slama, that is what we all know of ourselves as the Valley of Armageddon, where the plains of Armageddon, this is where the Battle of Armageddon will take place, right in that Jezreel Valley. It was incredible to look over those unbelievably beautiful green plains between these two mountains right in the heart of this valley and realize that this was the crossroads of the caravan routes from Iraq and Mesopotamia and all that coming into Israel, and that this may at one point, if biblical prophecy proves correct, which I'm sure it will be the battle of good and evil taking place right there. I stood overlooking that plain and reflected on that for a long time.
What was interesting, I had just done a paper actually about this area because it's where the prophetess and judge, only female judge, Deborah, had led a battle against the Canaanites in the Israelites' attempt to clean the pagans out of the Holy Land.
Yeah, just unbelievable. From there, we went to Mount Carmel, where we got our first view. Our eyes were set on the Sea of Galilee from this point. What an overwhelming feeling to stand there, looking at the Sea of Galilee for the first time. And our next stop was the Mount of Beatitudes, where we celebrated just a beautiful Mass. And, of course, the gospel that day was from Mark.
It was. It was really special because it was Mark chapter 6, loaves and fishes.
Loaves and fishes.
And from the back of the church, you could actually see the hillside where Jesus blessed the 5 loaves, the 2 fish, and fed the 5,000.
With all the baskets of leftovers.
With all the baskets. Yeah.
And we're standing there, and everything's just coming to life. And before we left the church, Jeff said, isn't it amazing to be standing in the very place where the miracle of the loaves and fishes happened?
And he said, think about Jesus on the Sea of Galilee when he was sleeping in the fishing boat and the apostles woke him and said, you know, we're in the storm. And he calmed the waves. And Jeff said, not unlike today.
Because it was true.
Because the wind and rain never stopped.
Well, you know, the next day we traveled to Cana, the site of Jesus' first miracle, changing water to wine, and to Nazareth, where the archangel Gabriel told Mary that she would bear the Son of God. And you have to imagine, having been an altar boy like I was, and having read and lived so much of this, it was just absolutely, as I say, it was a life-changing moment. But y'all, we're going to continue to tell you more about the trip. We have an unbelievable guest who's going to join us from Israel today. And you don't want to miss a word he has to say. We're going to be back in just a minute.
חולמות כל היום על ידיך כשתבוא תיצא אותי משתי ידיך משדה לנהר תלחוץ את פניי ותגיד לי מילים כמו שרק אתה יודע אם תלך מי יחבק אותי ככה מי ישמע אותי בסוף היום.
Greetings. Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
This is Nellie Mackay inviting you to visit E-Town this week. I'll be joined by Nick and Helen, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and the winner of the E-Achievement Award. That's this week in E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
There's a car, truck, or boat taking up space at your house, and you're finally ready to do something about it, KRVS just might be the answer. Your vehicle could be used to support public radio in our community through KRVS's car donation program. One phone call is all it takes. Whether it's running or not, we'll come and get the vehicle, send you a tax receipt when it sells, and you just supported KRVS. Call us now at 877- KRVS 887 or visit our website at krvs.org to learn more. And thanks.
KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Ava Nagila, Ava Nagila. Ava Nagila Venesmacha, Ava Nagila, Ava Nagila, Ava Nagila Venesmacha, Ava Naranina,
Havana ranina, Havana ranina, benesmacha. Havana ranina, Havana ranina, Havana ranina, benesmacha.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio as well. And today we're talking about the sights, sounds, and history of Israel. In fact, Michelle, as I was listening to that music just now, it reminds me of a Rabbi Barry Weinstein when he comes and sits here for our Passover show.
Which we'll be doing in a few weeks.
Which we will be doing in a couple of weeks. We opened the show with our thoughts about Israel and of course, the weather we encountered there and the places we visited. But nothing more interesting to us than that wonderful person we met there. Why don't you introduce him to everybody?
Well, I would be happy to. Once we disembarked from our 10.5-hour flight from JFK in New York to Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv, there was Harrison Cohen. He was a beaming light on that cold, wet winter's day. He welcomed us. He loaded all of his little pilgrims onto the tour bus and whisked us away, and thus began our journey.
And we had been warned because people said, you're going to have the best guide on your bus. You're going to have the best guide. And I said, oh, man, I love hearing that.
I know. It's true. We checked him out before we left. But our journey of Israel began, and our friendship with Harrison began at that moment as well. And, you know, Harrison was actually born in a farm and village on the way to Jerusalem in 1959. His parents were Jews from India who were part of the 1949 immigration of so many Jewish people to the newly reborn state of Israel. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about that. Harrison served for 3 years in the Israeli army, like all young Israeli men do, from the ages of 18 to 21. Harrison's lived all over the world. He's lived in New York and London and now Tel Aviv. He was a flight attendant.
I didn't realize he was a flight attendant. Yeah, I remember hearing that story.
Well, you know, I think it prepared him for all of the obnoxious questions we asked him on that trip. For 20 years, he has guided tours of his native Israel. He loves traveling the world. He's very well read. He's done many studies in world history, African studies. He loves teaching Christian pilgrims from all denominations about the Holy Land. Harrison's knowledge of Judaism, Christianity, Islam is so impressive. And his knowledge, the vast knowledge that he has of every historical site in the land. I knew, John, and I think you would agree, I knew we were in a treat from the first time we sat on that bus, that first official day when he pulled out his map of Israel. And I thought, okay, now we're getting down to business. And it's true. It's no wonder that Harrison is one of the most sought-after guides of the Holy Land. And after being with Harrison for 2 weeks, not only is he still talking to us, but he's agreed to come to Louisiana for our Blue Bus reunion sometime this summer. So, shalom, Harrison. It's so nice to have you with us.
Hello, Michelle.
Hey, sir.
How are you doing? It's so good to hear your voice.
You won't believe where I'm standing right now. I've entered the old city of Jerusalem, and we're just now viewing the most beautiful view in the world, the old city of Jerusalem.
So it's nighttime, and the lights of Jerusalem are on, and you're standing on that mountain ridge overlooking the entire city from the mountaintop as you're walking into Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, and there's a sun right in front of us setting over the city. Just beautiful.
Wow, wow. Well, you know, thank you so much for spending time. I can only imagine you're surrounded by hundreds of people there and you're taking a minute to talk to us. Harrison, you've had the opportunity to experience, as Michelle mentioned a minute ago, a wide range of professions. You lived in New York and London. Today you live in Tel Aviv and constantly on the move, guiding groups through the Holy Land. What actually led you to this profession, which you are absolutely magnificent in?
I would say few reasons. One is the passion of the country, the land, the history, and the passion of teaching and passing on the information and the knowledge through my eyes, through the eyes of a local person, and trying to install this passion to other people who are coming here with passion for the Bible. Those are the main reasons.
You know, Harrison, and you're responsible for knowing about everything because you never know what ridiculous question one of us pilgrims is going to ask, but you have such a broad range of knowledge. I mean, religion, politics, culture, history. Frankly, there were days when we were absolutely overwhelmed with all the knowledge you shared in a good way. So where have you studied? What have you focused on to collect all of this research, all of this knowledge that you share?
Well, the recent official course for the Ministry of Tourism of Israel, which lasts about a year and a half, you cover all facets of Israel, from geology to the different faiths, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, to all the denomination, art, Christian art, Muslim art, Jewish art. We simply cover the course, all those. And in addition, everyone brings his input, what he studies on his own, the books he reads, the things he hears, even from his pilgrims. You know, you never stop learning.
Harrison, I have to admit that we've certainly been enlightened to Israel. I tell Michelle every day it was life-changing, and you certainly had a lot to do with that for us. So often as Americans, you know, our knowledge and understanding of the world is limited to our own surroundings. Our country is so big, we're so involved, and we look at world history, world politics as somewhere else. We mentioned in your introduction that your parents were part of the 1949 immigration of Jews to Israel, to the new state. Can you tell us a little bit about that creation and about that movement?
In 1948, we received our independence. It ended 2,000 years of exile, forced exile on the Jews, who wandered through the world, pushed around with the climax happening at the Holocaust, the Second World War. And once the message was passed around to all the Jewish community around the world, from Ethiopia to Russia to America, to India, where my parents came from, they all started coming back to the land, to the homeland after 2,000 years, and it turned to be a melting pot of cultures because each Jew came with a culture of the country he was there, clothing, music, food, and created here a melting pot of a mixture, of mosaic, of food, of music, of clothing. That's why we don't have an Israeli food product to lunch. It's like a whole mixture of food. And I think groups experience that when you come to Israel in the hotels.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the foods that pilgrims experience when they do come? Because it is a mixture of cultures and a mixture of flavors.
Most people are familiar with falafel, which is a chickpeas with herbs, bought in oil, fried oil, or the hummus, which is also chickpeas based, and tahina sauce, and the vegetables, the amount of the variety of vegetables. I would say those are the characteristics of Israeli foods. A lot of vegetables, a lot of use of vegetables and olive oil, very Mediterranean.
You've worked with so many groups over these years, Harrison. Is there any one particular site that everyone seems to be kind of absolutely overwhelmed with?
Yeah. It's the site I'm right now with 150 Filipinos from America. It's Mount of Olives, the entry to Jerusalem. You know, people are praying to get to Jerusalem for years to save money, Jews and Christians. And that moment when he entered Jerusalem, and we usually play a CD about Jerusalem, the song, and then the minute they see the old city with the golden dome, people are moved. I think it brings it to a climax, this whole aspiration that people have in prayer to see Jerusalem. So I think the Mount of Olives overlooking Jerusalem.
Harrison, for 20 years, you've introduced thousands of people to an intriguing part of the world that few are blessed to visit. And I do hope that everybody has an opportunity in their lifetime. You've illuminated the minds about religion and politics and geography. I know that you're on the mountain there outside of Jerusalem. We're going to go ahead and let you get back to the tour. And then we'll try to set up another time where we might be able to talk to you.
God bless you all. And just be safe, and hope to see you one day in Israel.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Harrison. Okay, bye-bye. Michelle, that was a task. We know where he was standing.
It's interesting because last night a group of us who were on this trip collected and just kind of shared some of the experiences. It was the first time that we'd all been together, actually since Joppa, since we stood there and all
at
went
the port
to the airport.
Of Joppa, yeah.
What Harrison was talking about is that when you first enter Jerusalem, it's an ascent, basically from the lowest point on earth, the Dead Sea, up to Jerusalem in the hills. And I'd never thought about that, but we talked about it as we were about to ascend. And there were prayers of ascension and thoughts, and some of the people in our bus even saying, you know, the Jerusalem, my destiny.
Yeah, Jerusalem, my destiny. And, you know, I know where you're going. Let me just stop for a minute. Harrison told us at that point, as we were on the Dead Sea making our way ascending, mm-hmm. he says, remember that biblical sentence that said, and Jesus made his ascent into Jerusalem for the crucifixion. He was trying to explain to us that he was moving from one place to another, but he had to go up. And so all pilgrims ascend into Jerusalem. And now he's on that mountaintop right now looking down into the city, which is the most inspiring and emotional. There's not a dry eye when you hit there. And I know that's where you're going.
Right. Well, because you just don't expect it, really. I mean, you're ascending into Jerusalem. You've had a long day of touring already. It's dusk. Not twilight, that's different. We'll talk about that later. It's dusk. By the time you actually get into the city, it's dark, and you're on the top of Mount Scopus.
Right, right.
And the bus is stopped two blocks out from the actual official entrance into the city limits, and all pilgrims are expected to walk into the city. As pilgrims, you walk into Jerusalem.
As they've done for the last thousands of years, yeah.
Exactly. So we got off the buses, and it was cold that night. You know, it had snowed in Jerusalem the week before, so there were still little patches of snow on the ground. There were still snowmen in places. It was freezing when we got off. We walked the two blocks, and when we got to that lookout point, they had little small cups of wine for everybody and little bits of bread or crackers. And we said a prayer in Hebrew. And the guide said it in Hebrew. We repeated it or attempted to repeat it in Hebrew. And then he told us what it meant. And then at the end, he said, and welcome home. And I get emotional every time I say that because I never thought of Jerusalem as my home. And it is. It's the home of the world, really. It's the home of every Christian believer. It was beautiful, and that's where Harrison is standing right now with his Filipino tourists from America, and I can only imagine how emotional they must be at this moment, just experiencing what we experienced.
One of the most interesting things, y'all, about being on this trip, and I said it was life-changing, is that you will never, ever forget every single moment of that trip. Just like Michelle and I are living right now where these 150 Filipinos from America are standing on Mount Scopus looking over. The first thing you see is this golden dome of the rock, which is mm-hmm. sitting on the site of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, which is the big controversy between obviously yeah. the Muslims and the Jewish world, that this is the site of the new temple. And of course you see this golden dome because it's so large, and you're looking down on the city of Jerusalem with the twinkling lights, and you're drinking this little glass of wine and taking a little piece of bread, and everybody drinks it in this Hebrew prayer, and he says, welcome home, meaning that if you believe in Christ, and if you believe in the crucifixion, and if you are Christian, or if you're Jewish, that's also your land, that welcome home, because this is, in fact, everybody's home. And that's where he's at standing this very minute. And I can also understand why he wouldn't have good phone reception.
Well, it's true. And he explained to us the West Bank, and he explained to us the different, there are about five cities in Israel that are within the boundaries of Israel, but that are not necessarily other countries, but they are not owned by Israel, Bethlehem being one of those.
Which I think was very strange for us.
It was.
I don't know if we're going to talk about that later or not. But to think that five cities, I guess it is, maybe more, have been carved out at the time of the building of the Israeli state to say, okay, this is your home, Israel, but these five cities are not yours. And these cities, they have gates and they have guards that you cannot get into that. It's almost like a different visa to get into these cities. Like, yeah. It's like going to New Orleans and needing a visa when you get to La Place.
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem is one of them. The birthplace of Jesus is one of them.
Birthplace of Christ. In fact, Harrison, who is a Jewish citizen,
cannot.
A citizen of Israel and a Jew, could not accompany us into Bethlehem because it's unsafe for him. It's a Palestinian state. And although we were fine, I mean, there was no
No fear.
No fear, yeah. There was nothing that scared us. You did go through the gates of the city, and when we came out, you know, an armed guard did come on the bus, which is not unusual when you go into any new country. I mean, the same thing happens if you cross into Czech Republic from Austria, just to make sure that we all had our passports and, you know.
Right.
But that was an unusual thing, and I think I was one of the most surprising things for me that I'm still needing to learn more about, and that's part of the pilgrimage experience, I think, is learning how much you don't know.
Well, and also Nazareth. You know, you got Bethlehem, which is the birthplace. You have Nazareth, where, again, it's a city that's a Palestinian city, and it's not an Israeli city, but yet
Cana.
Cana, that's right. Cana, where the wedding of Cana, the first miracle of Jesus. It's not an Israeli city. It's a fortified city of Palestine.
Hmm. So instead of seeing, you know, churches or temples, you see mosques and minarets, and you hear Islamic call to prayer.
Hmm.
In Tel Aviv, every
Very
morning at 5 o'clock, I was awakened by the Islamic call to prayer, the first prayer of the day.
Right.
Very
and,
interesting.
And even when we went to where the archangel appeared to Mary in the church and said, you'll bear a son and you'll call him Emmanuel. It's not in a Christian city. It's not in a Jewish city. It's in a Muslim city. And I must say, y'all, we never feared anything. I mean, it was just the security
was
fantastic.
Safe.
We were safe every moment. No matter what city we were in, we felt very comfortable. Regardless of who owned the cities, they treated us wonderfully. They offered us great hospitality in every city. So I certainly don't mean to think that because it wasn't a Jewish city, we weren't treated well or we feared. Well, of course not. I mean, it was absolutely.
It was just surprising.
It was surprising to us.
Because I did not know that historically.
I expected when we went to see the birthplace of Jesus that all Christians and Jews and everybody are welcomed in, and it's not so. Even the signs that said, you know, that you're not a believer, if you don't believe in this, you're going to perish. I mean, in signs that are plastered over some of the towns. So it was different, no doubt about that, but I can say at the same time, it was life-changing because no matter what city we were in, we felt very safe, very loved, very respected. And y'all, I know we have to take a little break right now. And when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation because we want to encourage each and every one of you as our mission on Starting It Up to get your passport ready. You must go to the land of a life-changing experience. We'll be back in a minute.
This is the land I love, with my heart blessed by the Lord above. Right from the start, here's where I want to see. Love all the way, here's where I want to be. The rest of my day, milk and honey everywhere around. Bright and sunny on the holy ground. Happy people living everywhere. Love and peace is in their daily prayer.
Here's an Afropop pop quiz. What artist launched the Afropop movement in America back in 1982 and is still going strong today? Yeah, you got it! King Sunny Ade. Join me this week for a portrait of KSA. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, Public Radio for Acadiana.
KRVS continues its weekly musical journey to the land of the rising sun with Japan Jukebox, Mondays at 11 p.m. and Friday late night at 3 a.m. right here on your listener-supported public radio, KRVS. From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Starting It Up, the best tasting show on radio. Michelle, what about books? I know we picked up some books along the way and some things that people may be interested in knowing a little bit about Israel for their library, either food or history.
That's right. Actually, you gave me this as a gift, Josephus, The Jewish War. This was a book recommended by Harrison, our guide. Josephus was a first century Jewish historian, kind of captured by the Romans. Then he became Flavius Josephus, and that's a whole story. But Josephus recorded Jewish history. And again, this is first century, so he's an eyewitness to his history. He gave special emphasis to the first Jewish-Roman war, including the siege of Masada. And we'll talk about Masada a little bit, because we were able to visit there. I've added this book to my library, and as many of you know, I and three others, including Sister Dulce, are taking classes at Notre Dame Seminary. We're in a patristic studies class, Patriarchs, and this is one of the books that our professor recommended on the very first day of class that we have, so thank you very much, John. It's a wonderful book.
Yeah, I picked that up at a little shop in
Qumran.
In Qumran for you. Yeah.
Dead Sea Scrolls. Mm-hmm. We also picked up a book on the Sea of Galilee entitled Foods of the Bible, from Adam's Apple to the Last Supper. This was written by Miriam Feinberg Vamosh. The book explores every aspect of the foods that are mentioned in the Bible. You learn about what people ate, what they drank, how they raised and stored their foods. You even learn a little bit about food commerce. Plus, there are a number of biblically inspired recipes. I love this book because there's a bibliography in it. And I love books with a bibliography because that tells me that whoever put this together was a researcher, they were a scholar, and they were interested in not only you knowing the facts, but in knowing where to find additional information. So I love these two books, Josephus, The Jewish War, and Food at the Time of the Bible. We'll have both of those books on our website, jfolse.com. And again, great additions to my culinary library, and certainly yours too.
All right, and Slama, while we're at it, we should probably talk a little bit about our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/starringitupradio, facebook.com/starringitupradio. What's happening on Facebook? Any interesting commentary out there? Anybody?
Every day there's interesting commentary out there. That is the forum of cooking and good taste in food. For sure.
I like the way you said that. So any examples of anything coming through? Or?
Well, like I was telling you, we have a stuffed merloton recipe.
By the way, I just put in a merloton arbor next to my new pig pens out at, called Hog Heaven, by the way. My Hog Heaven pig pens out at White Oak Plantation, where we're planting the rare white melitons. The rare white melitons given to us as a gift from a professor over at Tulane University, who is the authority of all things meliton. So you want to? We'll load something up on that so our listeners can not only see the rare whites, but also a little bit about the
history
of
meliton. Yeah, that would be great. Get some pictures up there on the net.
Right, right.
But we are still running a competition where we want to see your prized cuisine. We want to see what it is that when people think of you coming to the shindig this weekend, what is it that you will be expected to bring? What is your namesake cuisine?
Something from the old family heirloom recipe box file that you have on the on the counter that your family is known for, and that you are always saying, oh, you bring the crawfish etouffee, it's the best. Then we want to know that. Then we'll choose one of those recipes every month to be a guest on Starting It Up.
And we've been having some come in. We have a backlog now. We got to start going through those.
Let's go through them, and let's sit down this week, have the board of directors meeting.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, y'all, so remember, go to Stirring It Up, you know, Stirring It Up Radio, and that's facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and you can plug right into it right there. And all facts and figures, if you want to relive the show, you can go to my website, jfalls.com, and just go down to radio and click on to the radio show, and everything is there, including the name of the books Michelle just gave you, the name of our guests, how to get in touch with them, etc., etc., etc. Everything is right there. So, Michelle, before we get to the recipe, we have to mention that we explored a couple of very important places mentioned in the Bible as part of our trip, like Capernaum, for example, where Jesus preached and lived the gospel, where he cured Peter's mother-in-law, and where he lived actually in Peter's house. We went to Mass in a church overlooking, it had a glass floor in the church looking down in Peter's house, excavations of that house, even the doorway where Jesus walked into his room. And over to the left of that church was the great temple at Capernaum, where they lowered the man through the ceiling for Jesus to perform a miracle, telling him to pick up his mat and walk, because there were so many people there. You remember that biblical story?
Right. We were standing in the remains of a 4th century Jewish temple that had been built on top of the 1st century temple where Jesus actually preached. And that was on the Sea of Galilee. I think what amazed me so much was, again, I'm geographically challenged a lot of times, but in seeing a place, it brings it into sharp focus. So the Sea of Galilee, it's truly just a lake, you know, Lake Kinneret. The reason that it's called a sea is because the region is mostly desert. So for the people there, a body of water is a body of water. A sea is an ocean, is a river.
It's huge,
There's no distinction. Whereas to us, a desert is a desert is a desert, yet there are several different types of deserts for them. So the Sea of Galilee is only about 7 miles across and 15 miles long. So if you think about that, you know, what would we equate that to? False River?
False River,
I mean,
maybe.
You know, like that. It's a very small area. And we had the joy of actually riding in a boat that was built as one of the first century boats would have been built, and crossing the Sea of Galilee.
And having a beautiful lecture on, on Jesus in the Sea of Galilee and the storm and all of that. And the next day, if you remember, you and I got up very early in the morning and we went out to the seashore on the Sea of Galilee and recreated for our public television show with Jeff Cavins. We recreated that biblical scene of Jesus after the resurrection, cooking his breakfast of fish, of St. Peter's fish that comes out of the Sea of Galilee, which we know of as tilapia.
Cool.
And we set a fire of, just taking the right out, word for word out of the Bible story, built a fire out of sticks on the seashore of the Sea of Galilee, surrounded it by rocks, and roasted some fish, the St. Peter's fish. And the disciples didn't really know that it was Jesus when he welcomed them over to have breakfast. And then they understood that it was him. That was after the resurrection. And we recreated that scene and then took a beautiful picture of that scene and videoed it from our fishing segment on PBS.
We were staying at an area, Ian Gev, on the eastern banks of the Sea of Galilee. And again, the geography of the region, if you can think about this, we were about 7 miles from the Syrian border right there. So, you know, that was shocking to me. I had no idea that we would be so close to Syria. And one day when we went to Tel Dan, a little farther north, and then to Caesarea Philippi, we were about 2 miles from Lebanon. It was just over the
Over the ridge of the mountain.
Right over the ridge of the mountain. And then, of course, when we were, and we'll talk more about this, but when we were on the Jordan River at the site of Jesus' baptism by John the Baptist, right across the river that we could have walked across.
Yeah, we could see it right there. We could throw a stone and hit Jordan, right?
The country of Jordan. And those things just never had clicked for me before.
I think what was so interesting was just how small, when you study the Bible and you think of Jesus' life in the Bible and his travels from his first miracle at Cana, you know, all the way around to the home of Mary Magdalene, and on and on and on. It's just a little village almost. Even the Via Dolorosa, even the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem, when we carried the cross down the Via Dolorosa as Jesus did, and got to Golgotha, where he was crucified on the hill with the two men. it's just a short distance. It's like a block long, you know, and you think of how far it is in your mind and not having seen it.
Harrison told us that from the site where Jesus was condemned, Fort Antonio, to the actual crucifixion site, the Via Dolorosa, was like 600 yards.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, think about that. And when we stood on the Mount of Olives overlooking the city, you could see everything. You could see the Temple Mount. You could see Caiaphas' house. You could see the Kidron Valley right before you. Gethsemane was to the left. You were on the Mount of Olives. You were standing on the roadway where Jesus entered Jerusalem
on the east gate. On the donkey at the east gate with the Palm Sunday.
All of it within, I mean, what would you say, a 2-mile radius?
At the most.
All of it right there. Amazing.
No, absolutely. And then, you know, of course we visited some of the great Roman towns. We visited the Dead Sea Scrolls, where Bedouin Shepherd discovered these scrolls in the 1900s. We actually visited the museum where many of the scrolls are on display. We celebrated a magnificent mass on the Jordan River and actually stepped down into the river to touch the water and fill up our little bottles.
The banks were flooded because of all the rain, and it was so interesting to watch the tour guides, because they had been there the week before or 2 weeks before, and they said, oh my gosh, look at the water, it's over the banks, and we couldn't go to the banks because the water was so high, and they were just astounded.
And I'll let you talk about the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, Michelle, but I want to say we were lucky enough to befriend the third generation gardener of the Garden of Gethsemane. Mm-hmm. And the garden is locked off. You cannot get in it. You can only walk around it and look at the garden where Jesus knelt and prayed on that Holy Thursday. And the rock, supposedly, where he knelt, and the 2,000-year-old olive tree is still standing. They've documented that that tree was alive when he was there.
Oh, wow.
And I showed up early one morning at 6 o'clock with Scott Dumite, who had met the gardener, in my chef coat and hat. And I explained to him that I took a picture in the most famous place in every city that I ever visited in my chef coat. And was there any way I would be able to get into the garden to take a picture in that oak tree? And there was a lot of discussion and back and forth and back and forth.
And he said oak because the olive tree looked like an oak. It was, the arms of it were so large.
So they talked amongst themselves, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden we didn't know what was happening, but all of a sudden this gardener walked up and unlocked the gate, swung it open, and just kind of moved away. Remember that?
Yeah.
And he says, you have just a minute.
Yeah.
And we were able to go into the Garden of Gethsemane, which was impossible to do, and a gift from God for us, no doubt about it. And we went in, I took a picture in my chef coat, then I said, Michelle, come on, hurry up, jump in. And she jumped in, we took a picture. Kim Johnson jumped in, and then we took that picture in the Garden of Gethsemane, which was, as I say, a very special gift for me anyway, and for all of us. And then eventually ended up at, again, overlooking the city at the Kidron Valley, and took our official picture with the city of Jerusalem in the background in my chef coat, which I'll always have, from the Great Wall of China. I have it to Moscow, you name it. But Michelle, I think for you and I, the trip being as special as it was, and being involved with Sister Dulce at the Cypress Springs Mercedarian Prayer Center, and being on this trip because of Sister, I think the most powerful thing, for me anyway, was the night spent locked up 9 hours in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Absolutely. It was a full night of adoration, and it was one of those unexpected gifts that came to us. We were sitting on the bus, and one of the priests who has been to Jerusalem several times has somehow arranged with the those who take care of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre for 10 pilgrims, including himself, to stay the night. And we were fortunate enough to be two of the 10 who actually arrived at 7 o'clock, and I remember one of the priests who take care of the church said, now remember, when we lock the door, you will not leave until 4 a.m. kind of like, this is your last chance, get out now. And they shut that door, and you can imagine, I mean, how tall was that?
The door is about 20 feet tall. It's about 2 feet thick, about 8 feet wide, mm-hmm. and it takes two or three monks to push it, a priest push it closed, and then the antique lock.
That's a door.
It reverberates through that cavernous church. I mean, you can just hear it when the door shuts.
As they start to close those, and you realize you're actually locked in.
That's it.
And the priest take the keys with them and walk out of the church from the other end, which is huge church. And inside that church are three of the holiest sites of the Bible.
Right. Several of the sites, the last four or five parts of the Passion are right there. The site where Jesus was crucified, the place where he was laid and prepared for burial, and then the actual tomb of Christ.
Are all inside of that church
within
of the Holy Sepulchre.
Within the Holy Sepulchre is a larger, almost church, temple, and within that is the tomb. So it was a church within a church within a tomb. Incredible night of adoration. One of the
And that was only three rules. You could not talk. You could not sleep. And you could not light any lights or any candles or anything like that. Not a light in the church with candles, and there were dim lit lights throughout this monstrous cathedral.
Freezing cold.
You had to bring these big wool blankets with you to sit on this stone. Then to be able to walk up to Golgotha and put your hands in the hole where the cross was laid, and then to go kneel down inside of the tomb where Jesus lay for 3 days and resurrected from.
The site of the resurrection, right there.
And believe me, y'all, all I can say is this: you must go home. We'll see you later in prayers. Good Lord, for that trip. Thank you, Papa.